This is Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, with the United States Senate on the eve of an impeachment trial, we break down the week ahead.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Than Bennett.
Welcome into Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. I'm Than Bennett, coming to you from Washington, D.C. And folks, here we go. We are 9.5 months away from a presidential election, but the United States Senate, folks, tomorrow, they are going to begin a trial to weigh what are, in my opinion, two very suspect articles of impeachment. Now, as many of you know, or probably all of you know, Jay and Jordan are right in the middle of the action on this one, so they are not with us today. But I can assure you they're in very good spirits. They are ready to get this thing going. Jordan may be able to join us here and there by phone over the course of this week, but as I'm sure you can understand, that is up in the air. We don't know for sure. In the meantime, the team is going to be here to keep you all updated on what is happening. I'm joined by Harry Hutchison and Wes Smith from our media centers in Tennessee. And folks, here's what we're going to do today. And I think this is going to be very, very important for all of you and for all of us participating in this broadcast. So I really encourage you to stay with us throughout the broadcast today. In just a moment here, I'm going to bring you up to speed on what happened over the weekend. There were several developments, key developments in the case, several key deadlines that transpired. So I'm going to get you up to the minute on what transpired. But then when we come back from this first break, we're going to do something that I want all of you to be here for. I want you to share with your friends so that they can be here for it as well. We are going to take the next two segments to read literally every single word of the president's 7-page legal answer to the articles of impeachment that were filed over the weekend. We're going to have Professor Hutchison and Colonel Smith help us break those down and analyze them. But folks, I think it's really important for you to hear this answer for itself. I've been over the answer. It is in very attainable language. It will communicate directly to you. And I think it will be the first time that the American people have heard the president's legal position asserted during these proceedings. It's been a one-sided affair to this point. We are going to read you every word of this 7-page response, much like we did, by the way, the very infamous July 25th phone call transcript. We read every word of that on air. We're going to read every word of this when we come back from the first break. But let me first very quickly get you up to date on what happened over the weekend. On Saturday evening, the House managers filed their trial brief. For those of us you who are watching by Facebook or Periscope, I'm holding up the document in my hands. It's a lengthy brief, about 111 pages, making their legal arguments on the two articles that they have presented to the United States Senate. Now, the president's legal team has actually just filed their response as well. It's also a lengthy document. We're going to break that down for you on tomorrow's broadcast. I got it at the same time all of you have, so I have not yet been through it, but I certainly will, and we will break it down for you tomorrow. Also on Saturday evening, the president's team filed their formal answer to the articles. It's the 7-page document I referenced to you. For those of you who are watching, you can see it in my hands. We're going to read every word of that, and I really do encourage you to stick with us for the next two segments. I think it's going to be important for you to hear. By the way, the House managers also just filed, as we spoke, their brief response to this brief document. It's called a replication, so that's what's taking place right now. We'll break all of that down for you later in the broadcast. But that kind of gets you up to speed, up to the minute, if you will, on where we are on this important week. That trial begins tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and we will explain the next steps in the process later in the broadcast. But after this break, folks, going to read for you every word of the president's response to these articles that were filed. I want you to be here for it. I do want to acknowledge, too, in this first segment, the trial is not starting until tomorrow because it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and this is someone, obviously, who gave so much to our country. I've referenced his writings in some of my writing. I think of the famous speech he gave where he said, "I've been to the mountaintop, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land." Folks, inspiring words from a person who did so much for so many of us here in the United States of America. Thinking of him, thinking of his family today as we honor him on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Folks, after this break, every single word of the president's legal team's first response in writing to the United States Senate responding to the two articles of impeachment. Stay with us. Tell your friends to join us back after this break.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the broadcast. Stan Bennett in Washington, D.C. on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Hey folks, this is going to be a big week. It's certainly going to be a big week for our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, as he joins the president's legal defense team. The impeachment trial begins tomorrow. Jordan, of course, is a part of that team as well. So neither one of us are with us on air today. Certainly a busy week for them. I would encourage you to keep them in their thoughts and prayers. They've certainly been in mine. A lot of important issues on the line here in this trial. We sometimes think this is all about President Trump, and certainly it is about the attacks that have been levied against him. It is about the articles of impeachment that have been passed by the House against him, but it is also about the presidency itself and what powers will be allowed to be infringed on without proper answer, without proper recourse, and what voice the American people will have in that process. So what I want to do in this segment of the broadcast, I teased it a little bit in the first segment, but over the weekend, for the first time, the president's legal team responded and asserted his legal defense in these proceedings. And I want to read for you that response. It's attainable language, but it's forceful language, folks. You're going to hear a response from the president's legal team that addresses many of the arguments that you've seen in the days and weeks behind us. So I'm going to break this down into two segments. I'm going to read you the first half of the document. It's a little bit lengthy, but I really encourage you, stay with us through this. It's important for you to hear this. And when we get to the end of the president's answer for Article 1, I'm going to pause. I'm going to bring Wes and Harry back into the conversation and break down some of what it means for you. But live on air, every word of the president legal team's response over the weekend is a 6-page document, 7-page if you count the cover page. I'm going to read it to you live. From here, these are the words of the president's legal team. The document's entitled, In Proceedings Before the United States Senate, Answer of President Donald J. Trump, presented by J. Allen Sekulow, counsel to President Donald J. Trump, Washington, D.C., and Pat A. Cipollone, counsel to the president, the White House. The Honorable Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, hereby responds. The articles of impeachment submitted by House Democrats are a dangerous attack on the right of the American people to freely choose their president. This is a brazen and unlawful attempt to overturn the results of the 2016 election and interfere with the 2020 election, now just months away. The highly partisan and reckless obsession with impeaching the president began the day he was inaugurated and continues to this day. The articles of impeachment are constitutionally invalid on their face. They fail to allege any crime or violation of law whatsoever, let alone high crimes and misdemeanors as required by the Constitution. They are the result of a lawless process that violated basic due process and fundamental fairness. Nothing in these articles could permit even beginning to consider removing a duly elected president or warrant nullifying an election and subverting the will of the American people. The articles of impeachment now before the Senate are an affront to the Constitution of the United States, our democratic institutions, and the American people. The articles themselves and the rigged process that brought them here are a transparently political act by House Democrats. They debase the grave power of impeachment and the solemn responsibility that power entails. They must be rejected. The House process violated every precedent and every principle of fairness governing impeachment inquiries for more than 150 years. Even so, all that House Democrats have succeeded in proving is that the president did absolutely nothing wrong. President Trump categorically and unequivocally denies each and every allegation in both articles of impeachment. The president reserves all rights and all available defenses to the articles of impeachment. For the reasons set forth in this answer and in the forthcoming trial brief, the Senate must reject the articles of impeachment. Section 1. The first article of impeachment must be rejected. The first article fails on its face to state an impeachable offense. It alleges no crimes at all, let alone high crimes and misdemeanors as required by the Constitution. In fact, it alleges no violation of law whatsoever. House Democrats' abuse of power claim would do lasting damage to the separation of powers under the Constitution. The first article also fails on the facts because President Trump has not in any way abused the powers of the presidency. At all times, the president has faithfully and effectively executed the duties of his office on behalf of the American people. The president's actions on the July 25, 2019 telephone call with President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine, as well as the earlier April 21, 2019 telephone call, and in all surrounding and related events were constitutional, perfectly legal, completely appropriate, and taken in furtherance of our national interest. President Trump raised the important issue of burden sharing on the July 25th call, noting that other European countries such as Germany were not carrying their fair share. President Trump also raised the important issue of Ukrainian corruption. President Zelensky acknowledged these concerns on that same call. Despite House Democrats having run an entirely illegitimate and one-sided process, several simple facts were established that prove the president did nothing wrong. First, the transcripts of both the April 21st call and the July 25th call make absolutely clear that the president did nothing wrong. Second, President Zelensky and other Ukrainian officials have repeatedly confirmed that the call was good and normal, that there were no quid pro quo, and that no one pressured them on anything. Third, the two individuals who have stated for the record that they spoke to the president about the subject actually exonerate him. Ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland, stated that when he asked the president what he wanted from Ukraine, the president said, "I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo." Senator Ron Johnson reported that when he asked the president whether there was any connection between security assistance and investigations, the president responded, "No way. I would never do that." House Democrats ignore these facts and instead rely entirely on assumptions, presumptions, and speculation from witnesses with no firsthand knowledge. Their accusations are founded exclusively on inherently unreliable hearsay that would never be accepted in any court in our country. Fourth, the bilateral presidential meeting took place in the ordinary course, and the security assistance was sent, all without the Ukrainian government announcing any investigations. Not only does the evidence collected by House Democrats refute each and every one of the factual predicates underlying the first article, the transcripts of the April 21st call and the July 25th call disprove what the article alleges. When the House Democrats realized this, Mr. Schiff created a fraudulent version of the July 25th call and read it to the American people at a congressional hearing without disclosing that he was simply making it all up. The fact that Mr. Schiff felt the need to fabricate a false version of the July 25th call proves that he and his colleagues knew there was absolutely nothing wrong with that call. House Democrats ran a fundamentally flawed and illegitimate process that denied the president every basic right, including the right to have counsel present, the right to cross-examine witnesses, and the right to present evidence. Despite all this, the information House Democrats assembled actually disproves their claims about the president. The president acted at all times with full constitutional and legal authority and in our national interest. He continued his administration's policy of unprecedented support for Ukraine, including the delivery of lethal military aid that was denied to the Ukrainians by the prior administration. The first article is therefore constitutionally invalid, founded on falsehoods, and must be rejected. Ladies and gentlemen, that is verbatim the response, the answer of the president's legal team in brief to the United States Senate on Article 1 of these articles of impeachment, which was abuse of power. Only a couple minutes left in this segment. We're going to read the next portion of this answer in the next segment. But quickly, I want to bring in Professor Hutchison, who is the senior counsel with the ACLJ, also our director of policy. Professor Hutchison, a powerful response. And to me, the thing that is most marked is this is the first time this defense has been asserted into this procedure. It was anything, Professor, but timid.
I think that's correct. And I think the answer clearly demonstrates that the Democrats have engaged in a dangerous attack on the Constitution, the rule of law, and with respect to the presumption of innocence as well as elementary fairness. And so the answer exposes the deficiencies in the House case, but it also points out, very importantly, that the House case, as stated, indicates beyond question that there is evidence which exonerates the president. There is direct evidence which exonerates the president with respect to the conversation he had with Ambassador Sondland, as well as with Senator Johnson. The House Democrats, they want to ignore the evidence right in front of their eyes because they're blinded by political ambition.
Folks, after this break, we will read for you the next segment of this answer, which gets to the second article, which is obstruction of Congress. But let me close this segment of the broadcast with just this closing line from Article 1. A lot of evidence was named. Actually, hold on. We're joined right now by Jordan Sekulow, executive director of the ACLJ. Jordan, 25 seconds left. What do you have for us?
About to head into some meetings, won't have my phone, but I wanted to say hello to our JSecu Live radio listeners. Let them know we're all in, the team is all prepared in Washington, D.C. to go to battle for President Trump tomorrow as the Senate trial begins. You'll see our brief filed later today, much more comprehensive than what the Democrats filed, and much more comprehensive than
our... Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Pretty great to be joined by Jordan Sekulow, even if only for about 20 seconds at the end of that break. Listen, folks, this is what this week is going to be like. I'm just going to be straightforward with you. Jordan wants to be a part of this broadcast whenever he can, but he's going to have to grab a quick snippets of time just like that. And when we get him, we will take him. We will get a quick update from him, and he will probably just as quickly have to leave. As you can imagine, this week is crazy busy for him. I'm grateful to have just a few seconds of his time. We'll get him back whenever we can. Folks, I want to go to the second article, and I want to read this for you. And I just want to say before we do it, I know this is unusual for live radio. Usually you would not read a document in long form like this because it takes a little bit of attention span to listen for 4 or 5 minutes consecutively. But folks, this document is that important, and I really do mean that. This is the first time that the president's legal response has been asserted into these procedures. It's a document all of us can understand, 6 pages in length, puts forward the summary of the arguments that they will make in a longer brief that has just been filed with the United States Senate. We will analyze that too. But folks, this 7-page answer, all of us can understand it. All of us should read it. All of us should hear it. All of us should consider it. And that's why we're taking time on this broadcast to read every single word of it. And I urge you, I encourage you, stay with us, even though it takes a few minutes, as we read through it. In the first segment, we read Article 1, which was the answer to the abuse of power article that the House sent over. This is the response to Article 2, which is the obstruction of Congress. So again, these are the words of the president's legal defense team, Pat Cipollone and Jay Sekulow. Here we go. Section 2, the second article of impeachment must be rejected. The second article also fails on its face to state an impeachable offense. It does not allege any crime or violation of law whatsoever. To the contrary, the president's assertion of legitimate executive branch confidentiality interests grounded in the separation of powers cannot constitute obstruction of Congress. Furthermore, the notion that President Trump obstructed Congress is absurd. President Trump acted with extraordinary and unprecedented transparency by declassifying and releasing the transcript of that July 25th call that is at the heart of this matter. Following the president's disclosure of the July 25th call transcript, House Democrats issued a series of unconstitutional subpoenas for documents and testimony. They issued their subpoenas without a congressional vote and therefore without constitutional authority. They sought testimony from a number of the president's closest advisors, despite the fact that, under long-standing bipartisan practice of prior administrations of both political parties and similarly long-standing guidance from the Department of Justice, those advisors are absolutely immune from compelled testimony before Congress related to their official duties. And they sought testimony disclosing the executive branch's confidential communications and internal decision-making processes on matters of foreign relations and national security, despite the well-established constitutional privileges and immunities protecting such information. As the Supreme Court has recognized, the president's constitutional authority to protect the confidentiality of executive branch information is at its apex in the field of foreign relations and national security. House Democrats also barred the attendance of executive branch counsel at witness proceedings, thereby preventing the president from protecting important executive branch confidentiality interests. Notwithstanding these abuses, the Trump administration replied appropriately to these subpoenas and identified their constitutional defects. Tellingly, House Democrats did not seek to enforce these constitutionally defective subpoenas in court. To the contrary, when one subpoena recipient sought a declaratory judgment as to the validity of the subpoena he had received, House Democrats quickly withdrew the subpoena to prevent the court from issuing a ruling. The House may not usurp executive branch authority and may not bypass our Constitution's system of checks and balances. Asserting valid constitutional privileges and immunities cannot be an impeachable offense. The second article is therefore invalid and must be rejected. I'm going to quickly read the final closing section. It's section 3 titled Conclusion. The articles of impeachment violate the Constitution. They are defective in their entirety. They are the product of invalid proceedings that flagrantly denied the president any due process rights. They rest on dangerous distortions of the Constitution that would do lasting damage to our structure of government. In the first article, the House attempts to seize the president's power under Article 2 of the Constitution to determine foreign policy. In the second article, the House attempts to control and penalize the assertion of the executive branch's constitutional privileges while simultaneously seeking to destroy the framers' system of checks and balances. By approving the articles, the House violated our constitutional order, illegally abused its power of impeachment, and attempted to obstruct President Trump's ability to faithfully execute the duties of his office. They sought to undermine his authority under Article 2 of the Constitution, which vests the entirety of the executive power in a president of the United States of America. In order to preserve our constitutional structure of government, to reject the piousness partisanship that the framers warned against, to ensure one-party political impeachment vendettas do not become the new normal, and to vindicate the will of the American people, the Senate must reject both articles of impeachment. In the end, this entire process is nothing more than a dangerous attack on the American people themselves and their fundamental right to vote. Signed, J. Allen Sekulow, Counsel to President Donald J. Trump, Washington, D.C., and Pat A. Cipollone, Counsel to the President, the White House, dated this 18th day of January, 2020. Folks, I know that took a bit of time, but I think that is a document that all of us needed to read, all of us needed to hear, and all of us need to take to heart. This is a matter that is about critical issues, more than just this president. It's about the presidency. It's about our way of government. It's about separation of powers. You've been hearing my voice for several minutes in a row. I want to bring in Colonel Wes Smith for his reaction, specifically on Article 2. Colonel Smith, obstruction of Congress. We've said it on this broadcast many times. It's not really what you would expect to hear. You would expect to hear obstruction of justice, but they knew they couldn't reach that threshold. And I think this answer rightfully points out why that article should be rejected as well.
Oh, absolutely. It's very, very clear. You know, on the day before Jay signed this particular document, we saw them march the articles over to the Senate chamber. And then we had to witness Adam Schiff reading all of these charges. And it was a bit like in a courtroom when a prosecuting attorney stands up and reads the charges against an individual and makes the case before the jury. Only in a court, when that happens, immediately the defense counsel gets up and presents their version of it and counters what the prosecutor has just said. We didn't see that last Friday. This is just the beginning, this document, of what will be a sound defense of the president. And as you indicated, and we'll talk more about it in the next segment, because they could not prove obstruction of justice, they've come up with this fallacy of somehow that by exercising his constitutional rights, not only as president, but as an American citizen, that somehow is a crime of obstructing Congress. And it is false on its face. And this document is the beginning of what will be a robust and a successful defense.
It shouldn't hold up. I don't expect it will hold up. I think the game changes when the other side's message is heard, especially when articles, the prosecuting argument, is as weak as it is. Folks, thanks for letting us get through that. I think that was important. I encourage you to read it on your own as well. After this break, we're going to let you know what's coming ahead this week in the Senate trial. We'll break down this response a little bit more. We'll also hear from you, your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll be back after this break.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now your host, Dan Bennett.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett coming to you from Washington, D.C., joined by Colonel Wes Smith and Professor Harry Hutchison. Look, in the last two segments of the broadcast, we read to you every word of the president's legal team's answer to the articles of impeachment that were sent over. The answer was about as long as the articles were. The articles were, I think, 7 or 8 pages. This was 7 pages, including a cover page. Folks, a document I think every American should read as we look forward to this Senate impeachment trial this week in the United States Senate and potentially into the weeks ahead. I want to give you an idea of what to expect now. Earlier in the broadcast, I kind of got you up to speed on where things are. Just to briefly recap, on Saturday, the House managers filed their trial brief. It's a 111-page document expanding on those articles, making their case to the United States Senate. And the president's team filed their shorter answer to the underlying articles. That was the 7-page document that we read. And then today, literally as we were going on air, there were two more important documents that were filed. First of all, the president's legal team filed their lengthy brief, the counterpart to the brief that had been filed by House managers. That's now with the United States Senate. We'll break it down for you tomorrow. And the House managers filed what is called their replication. It's their response, their short response to the president's answer that we just read. Tomorrow, shortly before the trial takes place, the manager is at deadline. The House managers do get one more opportunity to file a brief rebuttal brief to the filing of the president's team today. And then at 1 o'clock, folks, the trial begins in earnest. And I just want to give you an outlook of what to prepare for as that happens. The first thing that you're going to see is Leader McConnell introducing what's called an organizing resolution. And this is the resolution that Speaker Pelosi tried to force him to release before she would send the articles over. These are the rules that will govern the procedures of this trial going forward. Of course, Leader McConnell rightly has not released them yet. He did not release them until he had the articles in possession. But at some point tomorrow, you will see them. And at 1 o'clock, that will be the first topic of debate in the United States Senate. They will debate that for 2 hours, divided on each side. And there can be amendments to that resolution. So you will likely see Democrat senators try to amend those rules by introducing an amendment. They'll have debate on those and then ultimately votes. Ultimately, probably Leader McConnell will file what is called a motion to table to get rid of some of these amendments or to have the final vote on it, and there will be a roll call on those. And folks, there's a saying here in Washington, D.C., the United States Senate works by either exhaustion or unanimous consent, and that's what's going to take place here. Either it's going to run its course, and we will eventually run out of rules amendments to consider, or they will reach consent to limit the number of debates or to reduce the amount of time to debate them. My guess is that this process will take most of the day, late into the day, but I do think they want to wrap it up by the end of the day. Then they will have to take a vote on that underlying organizing resolution. And folks, the rest of the process will be governed by what is in that resolution. So we can talk about what we might expect, but we will know for sure once that resolution is adopted what the rules of play are. And I want to quickly in this segment bring back Professor Hutchison into the conversation, because I do think there was such an important separation of powers victory here by Leader McConnell holding firm, Harry, and making sure that he controlled, that the Senate controlled its own rules of proceedings rather than bend to the will of Speaker Pelosi.
I think that's correct. And this was Majority Leader McConnell's one of his finest hours. Essentially, all he did was enforce the constitutional parameters of impeachment. And it is clear beyond question that House Speaker Pelosi had zero leverage, and Leader McConnell refused to cave. I think he should be applauded for upholding the Constitution and the constitutional parameters of this proceeding, and I hope that he continues that effort.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, folks, you've heard from us. You've heard from the president's legal defense team. After this break, we will hear from you. We'll take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Take questions about the proceedings, questions about this answer, questions about what's ahead or what you think should be ahead. Again, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be back after this.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We've been throwing a lot of information your way. What I want to do in this segment of the broadcast is go right to your calls. I know I see a lot of you calling in with questions about how this process is going to work, and we want to try to address those as we can. Just keep in mind as we go to them, we can give you our guess, but folks, we don't have anything beyond what has already been made public, what is already out in the open. We don't have the leader's organizing resolution yet. There has been some good reporting on what is expected to be in there. But folks, again, this is the prerogative of the United States Senate as it should be. So until we see that, until it's debated, until it's passed, some of this is going to remain fluid. That is what Jay and Jordan and the rest of the president's legal defense team are doing right now. They are preparing for all of those different possibilities. But let's go to some of your calls, some of your questions about how this process is going to work. Let's start on line one. Robert is calling from Maryland, a good friend of the broadcast. Robert, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, Dan? I wanted to ask you a question in case you may be able to answer this. I wanted to know if they're going to allow the legal defense team for President Trump to go first to bring forward their case to exonerate the president, or if the prosecution, the ones that are looking to impeach President Trump, to bring forward their case first in the actual trial.
Yeah, we'll go to Professor Hutchison and Colonel Smith on this, but I'll just answer generally speaking. Again, that goes to what I was just talking about, the organizing resolution. There's some pretty good reporting out there that it looks like, guys, that this might be 24 hours total of debate between the two sides. The prosecution will go first. It would be 12 hours on Wednesday, 12 hours on Thursday, and then the president's team would have 12 hours on Friday and Saturday. That's what the reporting is out there. Of course, again, we won't know exactly until not only do we see the organizing resolution, but it's been debated and passed by the United States Senate. But maybe I'll go first to Professor Hutchison. That would look a lot like what you would see in a courtroom. I think it would look a lot like the 1999 procedure, and I think it would be a structure that would probably be acceptable to the president's legal defense team. But what do you expect, Harry? What do you think we're going to see in that?
Well, first, I would point out that the burden of proof is on the House Democrats. They have brought forward two articles of impeachment, and now they need to be able to produce evidence in support of their allegations. Keep in mind that at the end of the day, there should be a vote by the Senate, and it would take 67 senators to impeach President Trump. So the burden of proof is clearly, I think, on the House, and I think that is the process that will take place. So they will present their case, and then the president's legal representatives will present their rebuttal. I think part of the problem for the House Democrats, of course, is on one hand, they claim that they have filed an overwhelming case against President Trump. But on the other hand, as the New York Times points out, Democrats are intensifying their demands for more testimony and more documents. Both claims, then, cannot be true at the same time. So if they have an overwhelming case, they should be prepared to move forward with their case and make their legal arguments. I think the problem for House Democrats is they really don't have a case.
And Wes, I want to ask you what you expect on as these proceedings get underway. But in order to do that, I want to play a little bit of sound from Chairman Jerry Nadler. You know, he's the one who infamously just a few days ago was attacking Republican senators, saying that they were on trial. And it doesn't seem like a way to win over the jurors, so to speak. I mean, he needs Republican senators' votes, and yet he was saying they are the ones that are also on trial during these proceedings. He hasn't backed off of this. I want you to listen to this. This is Byte 3 Chairman Jerry Nadler continuing his attacks on U.S. senators.
Any Republican senator who says there should be no witnesses or even that witnesses should be negotiated is part of the cover-up.
Republican, Wes, who says there should be no witnesses or that that should be negotiated is part of the cover-up, even though, Wes, many of the witnesses that they now say they want to call, when he was in charge, when Chairman Nadler was in charge, they didn't call him.
No, absolutely they did not. And I tell you who is really on trial, and I think this will come out over the days and weeks ahead as this trial in the Senate continues. The reputation and the credibility of a group of people on trial is the House of Representatives, because their case was so incredibly weak. It was so incredibly biased. Due process rights for the president were routinely denied. So, yeah, there's a group in the Congress on trial as far as their reputation and how they have handled this, and that is the House of Representatives, absolutely. And going forward, you mentioned the resolution to set up the process for this. While it takes 67 senators to vote to remove President Trump from office, it only takes 51 to set up these parameters, which will happen, as you said, tomorrow. And I think that, to answer the caller's question, is the key next step. Going forward after that, I expect that this Senate trial will be, because the Constitution demands it as well as the Senate rules. It will be very, very fair. It will be very, very balanced, unlike the House hearings that led up to the impeachment. And then beyond that, what will be interesting is at the end of both sides having their 12 hours to present their cases, at that point, the senators get to send their write-in questions to the Chief Justice, and they can also question them, which will be very interesting as well. And it's only at that point, to respond to Jerry Nadler, that they will decide whether or not they want witnesses.
Yeah, and those senator questions and then the debate over documents and witnesses, I think likely, folks, is going to be early to mid next week. We'll see how it goes along. But look, I think this line of attack by Chairman Nadler is likely to backfire. I really do. I think it's more likely to push some of the Republican senators that he might have been more inclined to get on some of these tertiary issues away from him. Listen to what Leader McConnell said on Twitter. He said, two things cannot both be true. House Democrats' case cannot simultaneously be so robust that it was enough to impeach in the first place, but also so weak that the Senate needs to go fishing. And I think that argument has a lot of chance to carry the day with Republican and, quite frankly, even Democrat senators. I mean, if you're Doug Jones or Joe Manchin and your colleagues in the United States Senate want to go fishing and have witnesses that the House Democrats were not able to call, I'm not so sure that's a vote that you're willing to take on the floor of the United States Senate. So I think Chairman Nadler's strategy here might backfire on him. But I want to go back to the phones. We've got a lot of calls coming in. I want to try to make sure we get through all of them before the end of the broadcast. Let's go to Jerry calling from Rhode Island on line two. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hello, team. Great decision to read the entire document, especially Article 2 and the signature blocks, because it shows Cipollone's protecting the office of whoever's going to be the president. Colonel West is right. That's why there's only seven people who signed up to be the manager. My question is, Trey Gowdy's and Senator Scott's commentary that this whole thing may be a veiled attempt to try and flip those four seats 9 months from now, one of which being the Colorado Senators. If we can't talk about it today, can we talk about it in the weeks to come?
Sure. I mean, look, this is designed to be a political process by our framers, and I'll give you my own political perspective. I quite frankly think there's more risk on the Democrat side of the aisle in both the House and the Senate on this. I already mentioned Joe Manchin and Doug Jones. It's not, you know, to target those seats. It's just that those states and their place in the cycle are more likely to be upset by the process that we have seen. And then in the United States House, the control of the House is going to largely be determined in 31 districts that Donald Trump won but are held by House Democrats. Whichever party wins those seats is likely to control that chamber. And there is a political component to this. But I would tell you this, as much as we've talked maybe in a negative term about the political process that this has played, Professor Hutchison, I have long argued that this was wise on behalf of our founders to make this a political process in to this extent. It's that the American voters ultimately have the final say over how their federal officials proceed. So will it have an effect come November? I think it probably will, and I would argue appropriately so.
I think you're absolutely correct. Voters in November will have the opportunity to hold Congress, that is the House and Senate, accountable. And that's one of the things that I think will show that this entire process has backfired on House Democrats. Keep in mind that the House Democrats, when they launched this impeachment inquiry, they talked about this as being a solemn process, that they were saddened that they had to go down this road. But then House Democrats virtually danced with glee at Nancy Pelosi's signing ceremony as they collected souvenir pens and souvenir photos. So I think the American people will have an opportunity to respond to House Democrats and perhaps even Senate Democrats in terms of how they treat this process. This is a very, very important process. It's a constitutional process, and this process demands elementary fairness, and House Democrats have attempted to deny President Trump elementary fairness in violation of the rule of law.
Folks, the vote of the American people is a sacred thing. There is a process by which you can remove a president, but it requires a very high bar. In my view, that clearly has not been met in this case. But the American people get the final say come next November. One segment of the broadcast left. Your calls, 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. For those of you who are joining us by Facebook or Periscope, I'm going to put up an image on the screen for you of this legal brief response that has just been filed by the president's legal team. Of course, Jay and Jordan are members of that team. Jay is partnering with Pat Cipollone, leading that team up. You can see the cover page of this legal response that has just been filed. It's 110 pages of the brief, 170 pages if you include exhibits and appendices. So we will get into some of that tomorrow on the broadcast. We will break it down for you. I have not yet read it. I see it for the first time along with all of you as it is filed. But it now has been filed with the United States Senate, so that will be leading the news as the day goes along. I'm going to go right to your phone calls, but I do want to just read for you again. We read the whole thing earlier on the broadcast, but this closing paragraph, worth reading again. The closing response for the answer of the president's legal defense team: in order to preserve our constitutional structure of government, to reject the poisonous partisanship that the framers warned against, to ensure one-party political impeachment vendettas do not become the new normal, and to vindicate the will of the American people, the Senate must reject both articles of impeachment. In the end, this entire process is nothing more than a dangerous attack on the American people, themselves, and their fundamental right to vote. Signed, J. Allen Sekulow, Pat A. Cipollone. I love it that they closed with the sacred right of the fundamental right to vote of the American people. I do really think that is what is under attack during these proceedings. But let's go to your phone calls. Dave from California on line three has been waiting on hold a long time. Dave, thank you for hanging in there. Welcome to J. Sekulow Live.
Hello, fellas. My question's about Judge Roberts. I was listening to Mr. Dershowitz being interviewed on the radio this morning, just a few hours ago. He was asked about Judge Roberts' role presiding over the trial. And to quote Dershowitz, he said, "Nobody knows." And that's essentially the question. How do you see Roberts in this thing, if that's what we're getting from Mr. Dershowitz?
Yeah, the Constitution gives the Chief Justice a very specific role. He is to govern the proceedings. There is this ongoing debate on whether or not he casts a tie-breaking vote. The Vice President cannot in this case. He's conflicted out. That's why the Chief Justice is in the chair. This was a debate during the proceedings for Andrew Johnson as well, when the Chief Justice did cast some tie-breaking votes. We don't know for sure. I'll go to Colonel Smith and get your thoughts, but Colonel Smith, my own thought, just in observing the Chief Justice, I don't know him, but just in observing him, my guess is that he is going to defer to the United States Senate a lot. He strikes me as someone who's going to probably try to stay behind the scenes, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. And on the other hand, too, the Senate, they have a lot of rules and procedures that are set in place in addition to the resolution that they will approve for these processes. And so part of what he will be is like an umpire calling balls and strikes, sitting next to the Chief Justice also. I think her first name is Linda, Mrs. McDonough. She is the Senate parliamentarian. More than the Chief Justice, she understands the intricacies of the rules of the Senate in this trial. And so I think the Chief Justice will look to her a lot. But basically, the two of them together, their job is to make sure that the rules are properly followed.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think he will defer to her a lot. Great point, Wes. Let's go back to the phones. Steve is calling in from Maine on line five. Steve, you got a senator that'll probably get a lot of attention as these proceedings go along. But welcome to J. Sekulow Live. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Yeah, forgive my layman's perspective here, but my question is where the phrase obstruction of Congress originates. And in my mind, what I'm thinking is that this is another branch trying to take powers of a branch that they aren't not part of. And
Steve. I'm going to go straight to Professor Hutchison on this, because Professor Hutchison, we all know about obstruction of justice. Where does obstruction of Congress come from? It strikes me as maybe, I don't know, out of thin air.
Absolutely. So it's made out of whole cloth. It's purely fictional. In part, the House of Representatives claims an impeachment of Congress arises because they have not been able to fully enforce their subpoenas. But guess what? They have never gone to an Article III judge to enforce those subpoenas. That's number one. Number two, they did not hold a vote of the House of Representatives with respect to these subpoenas. That's number two. And so there has been no abuse of Congress, even based on the parameters of the claims that they have made. So this is purely fictional. I think they've come up with this particular charge. Why? Because they could not prove extortion. Why? Because they could not prove bribery, or they could not prove a quid pro quo. So they said, we are left without any articles of impeachment, essentially, so let's create our own. And I think that's what they've done. They keep claiming that this is a solemn process, but at the end of the day, it's simply poisonous partisanship at its worst.
Created out of whole cloth. I think that's a good way to put it. Let's quickly go back to the phones. Three calls in 3 minutes. We're going to Wendy from California on line six. Wendy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you. For just a comment and then a question. I'll make it quick. Thank you so much, your team, for that document. It gives me so much hope. And secondly, once this is said and done, in my mind's eye, it will be dismissed. If it's dismissed, can these documents hold off or fend off this from happening again in the future?
Yes, I think a dismissal would hold that off. And that's why I think it goes to the issue of the presidency and not just President Trump. A lot is at stake here. I'll tell you this, though. I wouldn't want to be going up against this legal defense team. So I would venture that they have a strong likelihood of success, especially after reading this answer. We'll get into the brief on tomorrow's broadcast. But yes, Wendy, to answer your question, I do think an exoneration would keep this from becoming perpetual impeachment for future presidents. Back to the phones we go. Let's go to Lisa from New Jersey on line one. Lisa, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a very quick question. I'm under the impression that no one is allowed cell phones in the chambers. Will media be present in the chambers while this is going on, and will it be televised?
Yeah, no cell phones in the proceedings. I think the senators are going to be very uncomfortable with that. The proceedings will be televised, and honestly, that might be the biggest change for the Chief Justice. There's long been a dispute about whether there should be cameras in the Supreme Court. There are not cameras. That's what he's used to. There will be cameras in the United States Senate, as there always are. You will be able to watch these proceedings. There might be some, you know, if witnesses are approved, there's the potential that those could be depositions behind closed doors. But again, that's down the road. For now, the proceedings will be televised. And I think you will also see some additional language in this organizing resolution that speaks to other members of the media. Obviously, there's always a dispute between them on who gets access and where. But typically speaking, C-SPAN has the feed inside the chamber. We'll be sharing that with other outlets. And so you will absolutely be able to follow these proceedings live. And folks, you don't have to wait for them to get going. We read every word of the president's legal team's answer to these articles, six pages, seven if you count the cover page. I'd encourage you to pull them back up and read them again. They are so instructive to what has been wrong with this process from the beginning. The articles should both be rejected. They do not stand. They do not have merit. And I think the United States Senate will ultimately find that as well. But I'm glad we had a chance to go through them. Tomorrow, we will go through and analyze the longer and more robust arguments inside the full legal brief that was just filed by the president's team. And then, folks, 1 o'clock, the trial begins in the United States Senate. Stay tuned. We'll keep you posted and up to speed.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.